Doogie.
Sam.
We've got our first retrospective topic today. A flick back through the pages of history. Not too far, just a couple of pages. For a player who very recently retired, we're talking Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Ibrahimovic! Oh, come on!
I'm the boss and the rest work for me.
Incredible Zlatan Ibrahimovic! World class!
I think the question we're asking is, how good was he? And how does he stack up against the greats of the game in the last decade or two decades? Now, the stats are pretty convincing here. Glance at Transfermarkt is 827 appearances, 496 goals and 202 assists. In an era where we do like our stats and we do like our goal contributions, that's about 700 goal contributions in 827 appearances. It's amazing. The career path, Malmo, Ajax, Juve, Inter, Barca, AC Milan, PSG, Man United, LA Galaxy, and then back to AC Milan for a little swan song before he retired. The greatest Swedish footballer of all time, without question. Greater than Henrik Larsson and even greater than Olof Mellberg. 62 goals and 122 caps for Sweden. But if you Google the phrase, Zlatan overrated, there's quite a lot of content. I don't know if you've seen this, but there's articles from, among others, 442 and Yahoo Sports and entire YouTube videos dedicated to the topic of Zlatan overrated. So he clearly didn't do it for everyone. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Obviously, he's a bit of a divisive figure. So let's drill into it. I'll start with this. When producer Jack, who stayed suspiciously quiet there when I mentioned Henrik Larsson, he must be behaving himself today, mentioned the topic and told us to go away and do our research, what was the first thought? What was the immediate kind of unconscious reaction to the word Zlatan?
I thought that's a good topic to do because there are, as you say, divisive takes on him. He is a person, I think it's really the person that's put people off the footballer in many ways. You know, the arrogance, the talk about yourself in the third person, calling yourself a king, calling yourself a god, and various other incidents throughout his career, which will maybe, and
well,
a lion a lot. Like, no grown man should be calling themselves a lion. But there is a lot of footballing ability there, of course. The stats don't lie. The career path is exceptional. It's one of my favourite career paths I think you could possibly ever have, especially given the fact he ended with that league title back at Milan as well. But there is so much to get our teeth stuck into in this podcast, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, okay, so you're almost asking us to separate the player from the personality here, which is genuinely really difficult, and I'm pretty sure this is where this conversation falls down most of the time. So we'll try to do it. I mean, I will be honest with you, I was not a massive fan of his personality for a very long time until, well, basically the last chapter of his career when he returned to Milan. This is my favourite part of the Zlatan career. It's the very last 3 years at AC Milan because I was really fond of that Milan team, but they were very young and they were very inexperienced and they couldn't quite seem to get themselves into gear to do what they needed to do to qualify for the Champions League and to win that title. What they needed was someone with a gigantic ego, but also ridiculously high standards to come in and whip them into shape in a way that clearly the manager like wasn't doing. And that part of Zlatan, that section of his career, I'm so fond of because I think he was the driving force for that Milan team to actually get over the line and win that title. And I was desperate for them to do it. And I think he was exactly what that group of players needed and exactly the type of figure that group of players needed to look to and learn off and react to. Up until that point, I have to say I really did not like that personality.
He wound you up.
Yeah, well, he must have wound you up too.
He did. Definitely did.
Like, it was difficult to process. And I think that bleeds into the playing stuff as well. And I think this is what maybe puts a few people off. The ego doesn't stop when he crosses the white line and enters the pitch. It remains. Not only in terms of the way he carries himself and the way he speaks to referees and players, but also in the way I feel like the game, if you have Zlatan in your team, you have to funnel your entire game through him. For you to have a player like that and for you to have a player in your team like that for the game that needs to go through that play, he needs to be damn good. Oh, damn good. And that really is the question is, was he good enough to deserve that kind of treatment?
It's a good question, isn't it? I think what you mentioned there about that Milan team, which I found quite interesting as well, is that everyone just fell into shape behind him. And it felt like at every club he was at, maybe excluding Barcelona, everyone just followed him.
Yeah.
And that suggests to me that what they saw in training, that they saw in matches, they thought this is a guy worth backing. You know, even at Man United, who weren't in a particularly good shape at that time, but Paul Pogba was kind of, you know, the big shiny new star. there, and he just seeing the way he interacted with Zlatan in interviews, he was like a sort of giggling schoolgirl. You know, he was like completely, you know, in awe of him. And for Zlatan to have now managed to make himself a quite key member of Milan's board immediately after retiring as well and having a say in transfers, supposedly, suggests that everyone is still in his spell, even now he stopped playing as well. But I think he did just about justify his position. You know, I did talk about that Barcelona spell, and that is the only blot on his copybook, the fact that, you know, he goes, swaps Inter for Barcelona, Inter then go on and win the Champions League with Milito playing a crucial role, who came in that summer, was Zlatan leaving, and Eto coming the other way, crucially.
Eto went the other way and won the Champions League, yeah.
And he goes to Barcelona only one season there. But I think it is slightly overdone how bad his time was at Barcelona. Like, I think stats-wise, it was still really impressive. I think it was 21 goals, 13 assists in 45 games. But from February to August, when he was sold that following summer, Pep Guardiola didn't talk to him. And it was clearly the big argument that has lasted for the next 10, 12 years as well.
So this Barcelona spell is, I think we'd be willing to call it egregious and a bit of an anomaly, because it was only one season. Everywhere else he's been, and look, he's been to a lot of different places, and it's not like he stuck around anywhere for a ridiculously long time. PSG, four seasons, was the longest he ever spent anywhere in his career. For the most part, it was 2 or 3 years. And on occasion, it was only one. Barcelona was only one. Even LA Galaxy was about a year and a half, right? It lasted longer there because they were happy to follow his lead too. That Barca spell, it does stick out. They, the club, the manager, the other players, whoever it was, they weren't really willing to follow him, to fall in stride with him. That's what it felt like. And it felt like a weird transfer to begin with, because Pep had his way of playing. He had players that were attuned to the system. And it's almost like he was like, I need to stay one step ahead, which he's always tried to do throughout his career. I'm going to do something that no one would ever, ever, ever expect me to do. I'm going to sign Zlatan. And it was exactly as bad an idea as he probably thought it was, but managed to talk himself into it for whatever reason. Everywhere else, people have, you're right, been willing to kind of follow his lead. But that shtick that he offers, does it have an expiry date of 3 years? And is that why every 3 years he moved?
Yeah, it is. I mean,
How
much can you cope with? But also, I feel like he was such an individual above the team at points, and he was willing to put his career first, which is what you should do. You know, you're playing for a finite amount of time. But as soon as Juve went down, obviously after Calciopoli, he jumped ship to Inter Milan, forms an allegiance with those fans. I think that was one of his strongest spells of his career as well. But after Barcelona, where does he go next? He goes to Milan. You know, he's the only player, I think, still in Serie A history to score 50 plus league goals for Inter and Milan. So I don't think he really cared about what people thought about him.
And he the fact
that he's now feted at Milan as a hero and at Inter as a hero and potentially even at Juve as a hero, that's pretty remarkable. There's not that many players that do that sort of career path. You know, that is quite a rare occurrence. And I think the fact that he was always putting himself first did alienate the neutral. But also he had such a force of personality and force of ability that most fan bases just ended up adoring him.
It's a little bit Ronaldo Nazario. Not the only other player I can think that's crossed that Milan divide and not been hated by both fan bases. Or the same with his Real Madrid Barcelona thing, right?
Yeah. It's tough to command the affection of so many fan bases, particularly in the elite club sphere. And by and large, he's basically done it with every single one. We've talked about his personality and we've talked about his career path here. We haven't actually really talked about what style of footballer he was, which is quite important. Yes, he scored lots of goals, but there's a reason he did that. How would you sum up his style?
I think he described himself to Piers Morgan a couple of years ago. Again, not a great combo, not a combo I'd tune in for on a regular basis. But he said he was the most complete player to ever exist.
What?
Which is classic Zlatan. Classic Zlatan. I'm not necessarily agreeing with it, but he was a pretty unique profile, which I think is what he's getting at. You know, someone of his size, with that agility, with that dexterity, who could score long-range goals, headers, could poach, could actually dribble really effectively as well, was surprisingly quick for his size, could actually play out wide reasonably effectively, could be a target man, could be a number 10, which you saw, you know, at times when he arrived, particularly at Juventus on the back of his spell at Ajax. Fabio Capello was like, we need to get this guy closer to the box because he's so willing to do everything for the team, a little bit like a sort of modern day Harry Kane. But Harry Kane started, obviously, as an elite finisher. Zlatan almost did the other way around, went from creator, who could also score goals, to this elite goal scorer. So I think he really did have it all. And there's very few players that can play out wide for Barcelona and look fairly comfortable at that level when you've got Henri, when you've got Messi coming through, when you've got good Johnson, etc. And in an era where they've only just, you know, moved on from Ronaldinho, etc. And yes, he didn't work out with Pep Guardiola, but he was still, his stats don't lie in pretty much every club.
For sure. I think what struck me really was the flexibility and the agility of one, you know, speaking as a very tall man with very short hamstrings. Zlatan's ability to, or even touching your toes is impressive to me at that size. But
me too. And I'm only 6 foot.
But beyond that, from a professional footballer, like the flexibility and it's talked about that, you know, he did taekwondo and all sorts of stuff to keep himself nice and limber. But this led him down the path of these ridiculous finishes, these goals that were almost inconceivable for any player, let alone a man his size. You know, scissor kicks, overhead kicks, acrobatic, like sidewinders, that sort of stuff. And he had a leap and he could score headers and he was decisive in the box and he could put a through ball through as well. Like it was remarkable. It genuinely remarkable. But I would have a bone to pick with him, his categorization of himself. And perhaps it's one of those things that gets lost in translation, but I'm not sure you can call a striker a complete striker if they don't have the speed to run in behind. I think that's a pretty integral part. And it kind of leads me on to, like, beyond the personality and all that stuff and whatever stock you want to take in that, it kind of leads me on to the big gripe I had with him. And it really manifested in both times that I was lucky enough to watch him live. So first of all, at the Parc des Princes, when Chelsea went over to play PSG, and then later when he came over to Man United and I saw him play the Carabao Cup final against Southampton. Scored an unbelievable free kick in that second game. Absolutely brilliant. But these were two games where you were able to watch him in the flesh and you get a much better picture of the whole pitch. I couldn't help but think that his unwillingness, lack of willing to run in behind and create space for others started to become a bit of a problem at points. It definitely constricted the team's style of play, and it constricted the space that you had to play, and he was always coming towards the ball rather than away from it. There were other players that were trying to create space for him, and that's when it really struck me, actually, when I went to watch PSG Chelsea, I think it was back in 2013, that when you play with Zlatan, even if you are a brilliant player, like, and this was a team that had Javier Pastore before he broke, Ezequiel Lavezzi before he broke, Lucas Moura before he broke. he was all right.
Very young Lucas Moura.
But Edinson Cavani was also in the same PSG. They all became complementary functions of the Zlatan attack. I really felt that way. Mm. It's not just about his personality and about his ego. It was because he wants the ball 2 feet and he wants the game to run through him. Everybody else, no matter how good you are, no matter how much you cost, remember how much Cavani cost PSG at the time, 60 odd million euros, which is even more back then than it is now. Everybody else becomes complementary, functional, secondary to him. And I think that created a standard by which I started to judge him a little bit differently. Because there are great players in this game that also open up stuff for other people, that work hard for other people, that help others. And then there are players like Zlatan who want the entire game fed through them. And I think you start to judge players from a different standard when you start to realise that that's what's happening. And it's difficult.
I hear you. But this is a guy that ended up with, you said at the beginning, I think 200 career assists. You know,
yeah.
It's not bad to get the ball to this guy's feet as much as possible. And I think you look at a lot of great players over the last 10, 15 years. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo, that great Real Madrid side. I'm not saying Benzema wasn't a great player. I'm not saying Gareth Bale was, but it was also set up to get the best out of Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, latter-day Messi, when he lost a little bit of his pace, was kind of, you know, latter-day Barcelona, latter-day PSG, was kind of set up to get the best out of them. And yeah, he's not probably at that level, but I don't think he's far off. And you talk about people falling in behind him and the aura that he had. You know, this is a guy that scored on his debut in the Premier League, Serie A, La Liga, Liga, and on his Champions League debut. He's the only player to score in the Champions League for 6 clubs. He's the only player to score in Der Klassiker in the Netherlands, the Derby della Madonnina, Derby d'Italia, El Clasico, Le Classique, the Manchester Derby, Man United, Liverpool, and I'm throwing in for a bit of a laugh, El Trafico in LA.
That's a legitimate derby.
It's a legitimate derby, but compared to the rest, it's a second string one compared to those great derbies. But this is a guy that consistently rose to the biggest occasion for his side, except for in a big competition that I do think we should get onto next, Sam, which is the blot on his copybook, the Champions League.
Do you actually care about that when assessing his career? Like does that, because for me, I don't think I care.
I don't necessarily care that he hasn't won it.
Yeah.
I do maybe care that his record in the Champions League isn't as remarkable as it was in league play.
In terms of goal scoring?
In terms of goal scoring.
Okay.
Like, you look at his record, 48 goals in 124 games. His strike rate was 0.39 goals per game. That's the same as Dzeko and Griezmann. For context, Kane is at 0.66, Mbappe 0.66, Haaland obviously 1.05. That's a freak. But it does go to show that Zlatan's numbers in the Champions League didn't match up to what you'd expect of a player of his ability. You know, in four of the five seasons that he won the Scudetto in Italy, Zlatan was knocked out by English opposition in the Champions League. He once went 450 knockout minutes without scoring a goal in the Champions League. Again, you just want more for a player that thinks of himself as the most complete player of all time, that calls himself a god, a lion.
Sure, yeah. That when you talk about yourself like that, you do have to be decisive in the big moments. And again, you're creating quite a big rod for your own back. And it's not just Zlatan that's done this. Like, obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo has done this. But then Cristiano Ronaldo has scored unbelievable goals in Champions League finals and on stages that Zlatan never actually reached. So when you put it like that, okay, fair enough. I've always found the argument that he didn't win the Champions League, so therefore, da, da, da. I found that very... I think it lacks merit because I think people underestimate how much luck you need to win the Champions League, and it's not all down to you. It's 22 players on a pitch. It's random chaos. It's a bouncing ball. And actually, like, for example, a lot of those Real Madrid victories, you know, the incredible run of Champions League, not without their slice of luck.
They weren't always the best team.
They were not always the best team. So it does not work like that. So it doesn't bother me at all that he never actually won it. But I guess he never really put himself in a position to be quite close to doing it either. I don't know exactly how far he got, but he was a big part of those PSG teams that inexplicably failed against Chelsea more than once.
A lot of implosions, a lot of last 16 implosions. And picking, we talked about it earlier, Barcelona, then leaving Barcelona, they go on and win the treble. You know, leaving Inter Milan, they go on and win the treble. Yeah, he did sometimes pick the wrong wrong club at the wrong time. And you also kind of look at his record in England, and I do think people kind of overlook his spell in England, particularly that first season, obviously, before he got injured in that second one. And he is the only player other than Javier Hernandez to score in the Premier League, FA Cup, League Cup, European competition and Community Shield for Man United in the same season, which, given the greats they've had at that club, that's really pretty impressive. And 17 league goals at the age that he was when he arrived, that was only topped by six players that season. That's pretty impressive stuff as well. Do you think that he needed longer in England for the Twitterati to really respect him? Because I do feel like the most people that say he's overrated did not watch him on a weekly basis in their league for very long.
Okay, so yeah, it's easy to take the headlines from a player's career, and it's easy to write off Malmo, Ajax, remove all those goals. Obviously, Serie A is great, but there's been a decent history of strikers from Italy stepping over to the Premier League and just really not doing very well. It goes back more than a decade. It starts with Hernan Crespo, maybe, yeah, or something like that, and goes all the way through Andriy Shevchenko and into whoever was next. And it's mostly Chelsea's fault. Maybe we shouldn't judge them all like that. But I think that plays on people's minds, definitely. Then you've got, as you said, the situation where he leaves Barcelona and into go and do the business. PSG, Ligue 1, 2012 to 2016, the longest stretch of his career. Scored a boatload of goals, like absolutely incredible. More than a goal a game, actually, on his final season in Ligue 1. But were people taking Ligue 1 particularly seriously in 2012 to 2016? PSG, four title wins in a row. Like, is that is that worth looking at? And did the ACL injury at Manchester United just stop people from realising exactly how good he was on a more continual basis? Because then, of course, the next you see of him, or more accurately, the next you don't see of him, is that he's over in LA for a couple of years. And it's out of sight, it's out of mind. Goals there don't count for a lot of people. I mean, I watch a bit of MLS, I kind of get it, like I do. And then it's the grandfatherly figure at AC Milan pulling them over the line when they need to. That's not to say he didn't score many goals there or didn't really have an impact outside of being off the pitch. He scored some goals, but I think my memories of that spell, which as I said is my favourite, is him getting everybody else in gear rather than what he did himself, which felt probably more selfless than anything Zlatan has ever done in his entire career, which is amazing. So maybe in that sense, a little bit underrated. But I feel like the only way to genuinely gauge him is to try and compare him up against the other strikers of those generations. So, you know, was he better than Aguero and Tevez? Was he better than Drogba? Was he better than these players? Was he better than Ruud van Nistelrooy? How far do you want to go back? But there are other amazing strikers that have over the course of 20 years, and that needs to be respected too, played alongside or against him. Did he ever stand out to you as this guy looks like the best striker in the world right now, or top three? Did you ever get that feeling with him? Aside from the goals and the brilliance and the glamour, did you ever get the feeling that like he was top range?
It's a good question. I think, as you've pointed out, his probably absolute peak was at PSG. You know, he was averaging 1.2 goals and assists per game. That's higher than what Mbappe averaged at PSG, which is pretty remarkable given, yes, Ligue 1 wasn't as competitive as it is now. PSG weren't the same project. But would modern PSG exist in the same way if it wasn't for Ibrahimovic? That's a question for another day as well. Was he ever the top three in the world? Probably not, if I'm being totally honest, but I wouldn't have had him far behind the likes of Suarez, Lewandowski, Benzema for sure. I think the issue was that I think a lot of people in this country, you know, really only tune in to a lot of European football in the latter stages of the Champions League. He was never there because he was playing for PSG.
Of course, yeah.
And playing for Milan or playing for Barcelona when they get knocked out or he's already fallen out with Pep Guardiola, etc. So he wasn't there in the biggest moments. And also, you can't really, it's the same thing about criticising someone for not winning the Champions League. Being Swedish, he was never at the latter stages of major tournaments either.
Well, he missed tournaments completely at times.
Yeah, for sure. But they're still, I mean, it's worth mentioning his Sweden record. I think it's 62 international goals, which is more than David Villa, Spain's all-time top goalscorer, scored. It's more than Robin van Persie, the Netherlands' all-top goalscorer, scored. It's more than Giroud for France, who's France's all-time top goalscorer. Like, his record there is really pretty impressive.
For a team that clearly wasn't as good as the French or the Dutch at any point.
Exactly. Miles off it.
62 and 122.
But are we just penalising him for not representing the biggest clubs at the best times and not representing the biggest nations at the time as well? Did we ever give him the tools to be the best striker in the world?
I mean, he made enough moves, mate. Like, you'd think if you move clubs 10 times and the vast majority of them are from our elite clubs, then you would have the tools in place to do this. It's impossible to say whether or not that was anything to do with maybe something that followed him around and was I don't know, linked to him, or if it was just happenstance, if it was just the randomness of football. I'm trying to look through here at he came through at about 2000, right when Andriy Shevchenko was in his prime, but he was still back at Malmo and Ajax. And obviously, producer Jack mentioned Ronaldo Nazario early on. That was 2002, 2004, that kind of area. Thierry Henry is a little bit later at 2006. Messi and Ronaldo already peaking at 07, 08, 09. Torres is around. David Villa is around. It's still Messi and Ronaldo and Messi and Ronaldo and Messi and Ronaldo, but Benzema starts to enter the conversation. Lewandowski was better than Zlatan for his whole career, I think, whole primetime career. Lewandowski was probably Zlatan with a little bit more pace and maybe a little bit more selflessness. So I think when I start to compare him to these players and I start to look, you know, I haven't even talked about their Aguero and Tevez and those guys, I'm not convinced that I ever really had him in my top three, top four. Over 20 years, you can respect the longevity. I'm just not sure he was ever in that bracket for me. And adding into that, like the concerns I've talked about, you know, with him sort of warping the team strategy towards him. The ball has to go through him if he plays. Everybody else becomes a bit complimentary. And is he good enough to justify that role in a top team in the way that Ronaldo absolutely was? I think the conclusion I came to here was he was very, very good, but he was never, and I have a very stingy definition for this, a world-class player.
Wow. That is, I'm intrigued to hear your stingy definition in due course. So, or maybe let's do it now.
No, no. So I think, like, obviously, I picked this up from one of my old bosses. Shouts out to Sean Fay. He got very fed up of people just like very lazily and broadly calling people world-class. He said that the way to define world-class is as follows. Aliens get in touch and they challenge you to a game of football, and you have to pick a 23-man squad to represent Earth. Who's in it? If you're not in it, you're not world class.
Okay.
Now, you don't have to take it that literally.
Yeah.
It's not three goalkeepers, you know, and that sort of stuff. However, that is a pretty stingy definition. That means you are limiting yourself to the top two, three, stretch four players per position. And that's where my definition kind of comes in. It's different for everybody.
Yeah, I've always done top three in their position in the world. But that's a bigger alien squad.
Yeah,
it's a bigger alien squad. But what my point on this as well is I don't know whether I ever wanted to consider him as one of the best players in the world because of his personality.
Okay.
Like, I don't particularly warm to arrogance as a quality. And, like, I know he's probably doing it for show. He's probably doing it, you know, as this sort of persona that he puts on.
Yeah, what's he like at home?
Well, exactly. Exactly. Does he talk like this to his family? Like, I doubt it. Yeah, they'd surely kick him out.
Yeah.
But actually, it's worth mentioning that, you know, in his own autobiography, he talks about what sort of drove this whole, well, determination to be the player he was and this create this character. And he described himself growing up as a small guy with a big nose and a lisp, and he had to have speech therapy. And on the back of that, you know, he clearly wanted to establish himself in life. He wanted to make a name for himself. He also had, which is worth bearing in mind as well, and something that I didn't necessarily take into account, a pretty difficult upbringing as well. You know, he was born to a Bosnian father, a Croatian mother. They moved to Sweden just before he was born. It was a pretty rough upbringing for him. He had some half brothers and sisters, one of which had a drug problem. His parents got divorced. He, you know, got taken away from his mother, who got sort of sectioned almost because of shoplifting and various other things. So it was a really difficult upbringing is what I'm saying. And you could tell that there was almost violence in the way he played and his determination to sort of physically dominate players. You know, Rafael van der Vaart said that he intentionally injured him when he was playing with him at Ajax. He waited 4 years to, you know, hospitalise Marco Materazzi during a Milan derby. There's numerous incidents of him not necessarily controlling his temper and very much like playing on the edge. You know, he had that fight with his Milan teammate Onyewu as well when at Milan. There's a various incidents there. But actually, when you had him on your side, which isn't necessarily an indication of world-class ability, but everyone that had him on their side really enjoyed playing with him seemingly and were willing to sacrifice themselves for his own ability, which I do think represents, you know, except for Barcelona, he was generally the best player or one of the best players in every team he played for 20 years, which is pretty special.
For sure. I'll tell you who really appreciated him universally. He's talking about teammates there all falling in step universally. The country of Sweden, definitely, they definitely appreciate him. Like, I have noticed over the course of the years, and I checked with my friend who's Swedish to make sure that this was definitely the case. There's been a little rippling, a little undercurrent over the years of, are we better without Zlatan? But you're always going to get that. There's people in England who have always asked the question, are we better off without Harry Kane? Like, that's going to happen when you have that figure up front. The question is always going to follow. Now, that did follow Zlatan around a little bit as well. But he usually put paid to it, often by scoring goals. And I think generally now, I thought I could bait producer Jack into this earlier, but he is regarded in Sweden as their best athlete, their best. Actually, maybe not. The pole vaulting guy is pretty damn good.
Duplantis, yeah.
So maybe he's not
the record like 25 times.
Maybe, yeah, every day he breaks it. So maybe he's not the best athlete. But in terms of football and in terms of persona as well, he's done an awful lot for them. I think this current conversation, I'll be better without him, it tended to rear its head when Sweden missed a championship, so they didn't qualify for a World Cup or a Euros, which did happen from time to time over his 24 years in the game. either the question would be asked. And I guess it's a version of the question that I've been asking today, which is, if you have a player like him and it all goes through him, when it doesn't work, you ask, was it worth it? You've got to be wary of outcome bias in that scenario. But the Swedes also found themselves asking that question as well. Okay, later in his career, post-ACL tear, that question is starting to rear its head again. But very importantly at this point, Alexander Isak now exists. Mm. Dejan Kulusevski now exists. Viktor Gyökeres now exists. What was your alternative to Zlatan Ibrahimovic from the years 2008 to 4 years ago? And the answer...
Johan Elmander?
It's Marcus Berg, which no one ever wants to, like, you'd never want to go there, right? It could have been Johan Elmander. It probably was Elmander and Berg as a duo. And let's be honest, not good enough.
No.
Not good enough whatsoever. So finally that conversation moves. And I feel like the Swedish national team actually moved on a little bit eventually, but only because Isak, Kulusevski and Gyökeres have now emerged. Before that, there was nothing. That conversation was silly, but maybe that again is a reflection of the conversation about the personality creeping into the conversation about the football.
On the topic of Sweden, where do you stand? Because I think I've got a bit of a hot take about his goal versus England for Sweden. I don't love it as a goal.
Well,
I really don't think it's as good as people.
Can I just say
it.
That as an Englishman, I also didn't love it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, I didn't love it for my, you know, for that reason. But I just don't rate the goal as highly as everyone else does as well. Like Joe Hart's miles out of his goal, and yes, I think he scores four goals in that game. But I think Ryan Shawcross and Stephen Kulka were our centre backs in that game.
Yeah.
And look, you know, he had amazing games for Sweden, Euro 2004, 2008, and 2012, I think as well. But I just think that goal and the credit that he gets for it does slightly annoy me. It's a great goal, but it's just not... I think it won the Puskas Award. For me, you need a goalkeeper in the goal for it to win the Puskas Award.
I'd back any professional footballer to score a goal in an empty goal.
Yes.
That wasn't what Zlatan made his career on.
No.
To be clear, it was quite a lot of goals. And for the most part, the goalkeeper was firmly between the sticks.
Absolutely.
And was just beaten regardless. All right, what's the conclusion here? What's the truth about Zlatan? I think I'm saying that he was very good, possibly great, but never for me in the very top bracket of strikers through those years. I feel like I could always name you three better. And according to my stingy definition, that means that he was never quite world class. I didn't like his persona until the very, very end when it helped Milan over the line. And that has probably bled into the judgment, but I can't help it. You cannot simply distill him into just a footballer.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely came into my opinion prior to doing this podcast, and I think it will still afterwards, but I do have a sort of newfound respect for him. You know, that upbringing is very difficult to bounce back from. He did it spectacularly. You know, the way that he changed his game from supposedly a player that took football quite relaxed, you know, during his time at Malmo and Ajax, to this elite trainer that looked after his body so, so effectively. You know, there's quotes from Verratti, you know, talking about him at PSG as just the most elite trainer. Paul Clement said the same thing. Ancelotti's assistant said he put on the best individual displays ever seen in a training session, which, given the fact that he then managed Cristiano Ronaldo for years at Real Madrid, is really quite something. But I'm kind of with you. I don't think he's definitely not in the Alien 11, ready to take on that planet. But I do have massive respect for what he achieved across 20 years. He won 11 titles out of a possible 12. In one stretch, only failing for 1 year at Milan. That's pretty remarkable. But yes, maybe picked the wrong clubs at the wrong time. But still an exceptional talent, but just not quite in that top bracket.
All right, that's the truth about Zlatan.
We did it.
Thank you, Doogie, for helping me get into the bottom of that. Thank you, producer Jack.
You're welcome.
Well done for not rising to the bait, the double bait about Henrik Larsson. Fantastic. And thanks to all of you who listened. Appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.